Get Dis.
The Dis from Disabilities. I'm Emily Rellings.
And I'm Kayla Connick. We aim to change perceptions of people who are differently abled.
To do so, we interview those with unique challenges who have demonstrated that there is nothing dis about their abilities and provide valuable information on how to interact with and treat those around us.
We put new episodes out every couple of weeks. Check out all of our episodes on Patreon.
A few months ago, Kayla and I had the opportunity to go to the U.S. Autism Conference that happened to be held here in Vegas in 2018. We recorded most of this episode a couple weeks after the experience. We thought that now, in April, being Autism Awareness Month, would be an appropriate time for us to share with you our thoughts and the way that conference impacted us. Probably just maybe because mine's a little hotter.
Your microphone's hotter than mine. Too sexy for my mic. When I was little, I used to love running on a treadmill. I had like 5 songs I listened to like on my little Walkman or iPod shuffle or whatever. And I used to put that song on like repeat.
Oh, that one?
Yeah, and like walk on my little treadmill and I'm too sexy for my shirt. 8-year-old me, like, yeah. So, what are we talking about today?
Well, you know, we went to the autism conference a couple of weeks ago. And we had such a really cool experience that we wanted to be able to share it with everybody. Some of the things that we picked up, some of the things that were happening. It's just a really cool conference. I'm not sure that everybody that could benefit from these conferences even know about its existence.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it was a really, really cool conference. And I left feeling inspired and my curiosity fire was kind of lit all over again. And I learned a lot. I mean, even as a music therapist and, you know, working with people on the spectrum for, you know, about a year, there was just still so much to learn. And it was really cool because it was not only professionals, but a lot of parents. And one thing I really liked was that most of the presenters themselves were on the spectrum. So you're really learning from the source. It was just 3 days of like stuffing my head with like knowledge and like meeting all these cool people, you know, here in Las Vegas. So we didn't have to take a plane or anything. We just drove out to this weird part of Vegas.
I didn't even know existed.
Yeah, that we that you don't see. It's like hidden and it's like this like rich people town, you know, called Lake Las Vegas. So it was nice to go out there and kind of be fancy for a little bit.
It really was. Yeah, we were there as exhibitors. And so we got to meet a lot of people that came through the booths in addition to going to some of the sessions that were really interesting to us.
Yeah.
So what were some of the sessions that you went to that you liked?
You know, I had one session in particular that really, I think, was the cherry on top of the whole conference and was absolutely my favorite session and presenter. His name was Ron Kaufman. Initially, I'm sitting in there and listening and really unsure of this presenter in this session because he starts talking and he's like, I have the cure for autism. And you were there with me.
I was, yeah. And I had that same feeling where I was just a little bit uncomfortable. I'm like, no, I mean, it's not about curing. It's about overcoming, right?
Right. And it was strange at first, the way he worded it. And then he started kind of going about like a case study. Like he started talking about this little boy who is, I guess, severely autistic, as he put it, and around age 3 and was in his own world, so to speak. So he's like, and now that boy is fine. And then he says, and I am that boy. And it was kind of like, wah, you know, like everyone kind of lost their mind.
All of
like,
a sudden, I'm listening.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. And suddenly my attention was like back up there and intrigued. Basically, I think the key thing that he said that in my sessions with some of my clients, I had done and you know, I was actually unsure of like, am I doing this right? You know, starting to second guess myself as, you know, it kind of sparked some side glances from, you know, intern and from parents even being like, what are you doing? You know, like, not that they ever questioned it. They were just kind of like, why are we doing this? He said the one thing that his mother did that initially brought him out of his shell or out of his world and, you know, made him communicate with her in a way that he wanted to was she participated in his stimming. He himself says, okay, wait a second, that's controversial, I know. But he explains it further saying, you are the ambassador of neurotypical people, right? To somebody on the spectrum. And he gave this awesome analogy with his somebody that he worked with that was also there presenting and said, for example, if you are sitting at the park, you've had a really long week, you know, you've been doing nothing but working and, you know, going to classes and everyone wants something from you. And then finally you get to sit down, you get to read your book, a book that you really like, and you get to just kind of be in that world. And then suddenly somebody comes up to you, pulls the book away and says, "Hey, what are you reading? You know, what are you doing? Hey, you should stop that. Let's go see a movie." For no reason. And then you're thinking, why? No, who are you? He kind of likened that to what we do to our autistic children, saying like, you kind of get in their face and you're like, communicate with me, you know?
Stop that behavior that you are doing that's bringing you relaxation.
Yeah, yeah. That is bringing you joy for one moment. And me and Emily both know that kids on the spectrum have busy schedules. Very, very busy schedules. For those who don't know, some kids on the spectrum have to do 30 to 40 hours a week of ABA therapy. And that's just one type of therapy. They're usually doing occupational therapy too. They're going to school and also getting these services in school. And then music therapy. So he said, instead, using the same analogy, you might want to sit next to that person with the same book. You suddenly sit together, you're just sitting quietly, and then suddenly you spark their attention. They look over and notice, hey, they're reading the same book. And then they start to ask you and initiate conversation, saying, wow, look at that, we're reading the same book. And then you discuss the book. So you have a mutual interest. So that's kind of what we're doing when we're engaging in stimming and that particular type of stimming of that individual. We're really kind of getting on their level and engaging in something that relaxes them. And that's also another thing that, you know, I'd also kind of always known, but was clarified at the conference. Stimming is a coping tool. And Ron Kaufman, again, in the same presentation said, our kids are brilliant. When they're so young, they've already figured out a self-coping tool. And we want to take that away. Like, what's wrong with us? So I think that was just the very high point of this conference, was kind of validating that for me and you know, really reinforcing what stimming is, why people stim, and how we can further educate everyone else about that and just give those tools to parents, especially who are around their children the most.
Yeah, I also really resonated with that particular session, that same segment of the session, even with the joining concept. And it just really makes so much sense. I mean, we want to be able to socially connect with other individuals around us in any setting. Any individual that we want to socially connect with is founded on mutual interest. And to expect someone who has social difficulties to be the one to meet you where you are is kind of ridiculous. For us who have the understanding of socialization and what is involved with developing a relationship, it's easier for us to go and meet them where they are and help connect in some level, because then they want to have a relationship with you, and then they want to be able to be in that frame of mind where they can learn and grow and be able to make a step towards you as well.
Yeah, and him and many other presenters said too, children communicate and like learn in their world through play. They're like neurotypical children. They're children. Mm-hmm. So they play, and that's sometimes their ways of playing are a little different, but it's still their ways of playing. So you want to also figure out the why. If there are behaviors happening and you don't understand them, try and understand. So think, why is that behavior happening? For example, why does my child run and slam himself in against walls? And we learn too with autism, it's a very complicated thing, because it's like they have a different sensory system and it could either be very elevated or just not enough. So in that particular behavior or that case, it might mean that they're not getting enough proprioceptive input. And proprioception is a different kind of sense. You don't really learn about it in school. It's not sight, it's not touch, it's not hearing. It's called proprioception. And it's basically where your joints and muscles are in space. In people in the spectrum, sometimes the proprioceptive system is different. So that's when you get somebody trying to smash against a wall just so they can feel where they are in space. There's nothing quite like flapping, like I'm doing it right now, and I can feel my wrist like rotating back and forth. That's also another reason why that particular stim or behavior is happening. And then frustration might occur when they're not allowed to do that, or when there's sensory overload, when things are just too much on the other end of that spectrum. So autism spectrum disorder, we realize, has a bunch of different spectrums within it. It's a spectrum of like, okay, which sensory system is different, and then to what extent is it overly active or is it underreactive? That's kind of how I think about it too.
Yeah, that was another one of the sessions that I think we both went to that I really enjoyed was occupational therapist Sarah Norris and Carrie Enck. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, but we're presented specifically on proprioception. And it was, for us, it was a review of a lot of information that we already knew, but it's good to have those refreshers as well. You said something earlier that triggered a thought. The other day, my daughter, she's almost two, and she's a neurotypical, and she was in the bathtub, and we hadn't put all of the toys away yet because her sister was about to get in the bathtub after her, so I didn't bother putting them all back in. And she absolutely flipped out. She just started screaming and screaming and screaming. You know, our first thought as parents is, that's unacceptable. Can't act like that. You know that. Then I realized she's not screaming to throw a fit. She's afraid that her toys are going to go down the drain.
Yeah. And that's literally what's going on in her head. That's what she believes. And wouldn't you freak out if you thought, you know, you're going to lose your favorite things?
So I was like, oh, no. The toys are safe. They're fine.
Yeah. Reassurance.
I sat there and held her and comforted her while we watched the water go down and see the toys are still there, you know, and she was able to calm down from that. And I think that we as parents and as individuals that work with people on the spectrum, we see these behaviors and we automatically assume that it's a willful behavior. Like this is something that, you know, we can just fix by sheer will, when really there's a lot more going on. And if we're just trying to stop them from feeling what they're feeling, that's not going to fix anything. We have to really see what is the core, what is the reason that they are engaging in this particular behavior, and help them at that core and not just try to slap a Band-Aid on it.
I can't remember which particular session this was from at this conference, but it really just made me sad because they said with developments in technology and research in brain scans, they're finding out that one of the main emotions in people with autism spectrum is anxiety and fear, resulting from just what they experience. Not only what they experience in their own body and in their own mind, just what we impose on them. So I came out of this conference feeling sad, but also just having like a new sort of like understanding and even more empathy than I already did for people on the spectrum, just because it's like nobody wants to feel like that for any length of time. And if they feel like that all the time, it's no wonder, you know, there are meltdowns and there's eloping and there's, you know, all the things that happen. One of the also, I think, cruel ironies is that there are communication deficits. So they can't tell you what's wrong or what's going on inside, like maybe a neurotypical child probably could. Like your daughter, for example, may have been able to tell you, my toys, they're about to go down the drain. And then you're like, oh, I get it. But, you know, some children on the spectrum don't speak or don't communicate like that. And that is one of the core aspects of autism, are communication deficits and speech deficits. So it's very, I think, hard if you don't understand or you don't really like try to understand why something's happening or why they're freaking out over something you deem minuscule or small is something actually very big to them.
And that's one of my favorite things to do as a music therapist, is figure out the puzzle and look at each individual and see what can we do to help this particular individual with their unique challenges. One of the things that has always struck me in the past, particularly people on the spectrum that are engaging in these behaviors, the parents will apologize for them. Oh, I'm sorry. And they're fearful that they'll get kicked out of therapy or something. And it's just like, well,
That's why you're here. Yeah, it's okay.
No, I want to be able to see this, because having you tell me on paper what your child is going through, it doesn't help me figure out how to help them, you know. But if I actually see these behaviors, then it gives me more insight into what we can do about them.
And I think too, having presenters on the spectrum present and tell you, they give you specifics. It's so nice because they literally gave us specific things we can do as educators, as therapists, as parents, to help our kids, right? So one of the things that really kind of stood out to me, and I still very much remember, is Tumble Grandin speaking. The whole speech, of course, but she told us that, you know, and reiterated that she had auditory processing and was very much more visual. But she said, I loved my speech therapist because whenever I heard anyone, you know, yell the word cat at me, it just sounds like, ah, like that, literally. And can you imagine what that's like to just have somebody like an adult, a bigger human, just going, ah! And expecting you to repeat that back. But she's like, but my speech therapist and said, broke up the words and said, cat, cat. And then she understood. For us, constantly thinking too about like, well, how can we do this differently to help? And again, each individual is different. And you'll hear this again over and over on the show. But if you meet somebody on the spectrum, you've only met them and that's it. That can't be reiterated enough, though. I mean, yes, there are some core aspects and that's why individuals receive a diagnosis. But again, it's also variable and it's a spectrum and there's spectrums within a spectrum. So very complicated. But I think that's important to solve that puzzle for each individual and find out what they benefit from, what their interests are. That was another big point, is finding that interest. If you know anybody on the spectrum or have a kid on the spectrum, you very well know that they have an interest that they will tell you about for hours. They'll keep talking about it. But I find that a lot of parents get really frustrated by that. But it's something I think that can work to your and their advantage, is really fostering those interests.
Listening to Temple Grandin was pretty awesome.
Oh, yeah. She's funny, too.
She really is.
And they're laughing my butt off. And I learned things. What these people said is applicable to how you call neurotypicals, too, if we're going to make that distinction. Because she's just simply said, interviews weren't my strong suit, but all I did was showed my work. And she would draw these elaborate diagrams and maps of these slaughterhouses and show them, like, look. And then that's what got her in.
One of the things that she said also, not being afraid to share the challenges that you had. I think the question was presented to her, should we, people on the spectrum, disclose when we're in a job interview situation? She coached that, you know, maybe you don't necessarily need to say, you know, I'm on the spectrum, but you can coach about specific things that you might need. I actually wrote down the quote. She used to say, I'm a little socially awkward. If I do something amiss, just coach me and be open about that experience, was her direction.
Certainly. That's another thing too, a very specific piece of advice. Be specific when you're talking to somebody that communicates verbally. Don't use metaphors. Don't use, you know, colloquial language often. I mean, not to say that they don't understand what you're saying. It's like she just mentioned, they get coached like you would get coached on mathematics or writing a paper. Same thing. They get coached on social situations and eventually they can learn. It's like anything else that you would learn or adapt. But I think to reduce a lot of anxiety and guesswork when talking to somebody on the spectrum, you just be very specific and be honest. Honesty is key. Delineating steps is key. And using, yeah, just very straightforward language.
Right. I think that my favorite thing that she said was, disability does not prevent you from doing well. And I loved that. I think that in our society, we are making an effort to help those with different abilities. And I think that we're kind of overcorrecting in certain situations. We're trying to do too much and taking away their independence and taking away their ability to find things. And I loved that idea of, hey, just because you have a disability doesn't mean that you can't do something. Get out there, get a job, do what you need to do.
And I feel like, too, there's a fear for those that are the support system of somebody with a disability. There's a fear that they'll fail. And then they're just not even allowed to try in the first place. Like anybody else, they should be allowed to experience trial and error and learn from it in that way. And of course, I mean, it will have to be different and adapted, but why shouldn't it be? We live in a pretty advanced age. Technology is really helping and there's so much potential. And I think letting people into the workforce that are differently abled or on the spectrum is actually going to be more valuable than people think. People might think it might be a burden or cost more money, but it won't. I think it will really push society forward because they're different minds and we need to start thinking outside the box.
Yeah, definitely. One of my favorite things also at the conference was the self-advocacy panel, where they had a number of individuals on the spectrum that answered different questions that were presented on different topics. And that was just really cool to be able to hear from people on the spectrum and their experiences. They were all adults, but in various situations. And one of the questions that they were asked was, how do they soothe anxiety? That was something that was really interesting to me because I wanted to listen. Okay, what are things that work for you? Because then maybe it'll work for some of my clients, right?
Almost every single one of them said music.
Yeah, I know. I was like, music therapy moment.
Thanks for advocating our field.
I know. Yeah, they did it for us very well. Yeah, she said it was a younger girl on the spectrum who's an entrepreneur herself. And she said, yeah, music early on was one of the few things I could use to communicate. And I felt free. I felt like when I was involved in music and listening to music and singing, I felt free. It was all lifted in those moments. So that was nice to hear. Right. Very validating.
Yeah.
For music therapy.
But there were so many other things that they said that was interesting.
Yes.
You know, about meditation or prayer or stepping aside, giving yourself some individual time to kind of regroup. Other creative outlets were some of them. The use of the fidget spinners actually helped some. And it's not just an annoying toy.
Right.
You know, it actually had a function.
There's a purpose. Yeah, fidgets help some people. And another, there was a teen who used Taekwondo, and that was his medium for, I think, expression and stress relief. And now he teaches others on the spectrum Taekwondo, which is really cool.
Yeah. So to be able to take those interests, those things that they're good at, to utilize them to not only ground individually, but then help others around is pretty cool.
Another session that this one wasn't so much applicable, obviously, to me as a music therapy professional, but just really eye-opening. Nothing I really gave that much thought to. But brace yourself because it's very sad. She was a mother of two teens on the spectrum, and they're both people of color. And she has her own organization that helps educate police and authority figures, because there is a really stark problem with police and how they handle people with disabilities, because they don't have training to handle people with disabilities. And she gave some pretty alarming statistics, specific cases about people being unnecessarily killed, and they weren't doing anything. So it was really very sad, but I think something that needed to be talked about. She's out there doing that. So I think I'm trying to remember the numbers, and I should have taken notes, but they're somewhere in my computer. It was something like 1,000 people with disabilities get killed unnecessarily by police because the police don't understand like what's going on. For example, there was another youth on the spectrum, and he also was a person of color, and he was waiting outside his favorite library, and he had his hood on and everything, and so I suppose somebody thought he looked suspicious, called the cops. The cops come, and he doesn't respond, because he's nonverbal, to commands such as stop, you know, hands up, and so he was arrested and has been in jail ever since. Yeah, and just another jumble of messes within the justice system as well. So poor representation for people with disabilities. So, man, it was just a really depressing but I think necessary topic. And yeah, you just don't really ever think about it. I mean, I feel like police overstepping their boundaries is a topic in society and pop culture now, but still nobody talks about, well, what about people with disabilities? Mm-hmm. That needs more light. More light on it, definitely.
You know, and a lot of us have heard these stories of the sideways glances that parents of people on the spectrum get when a child is having a meltdown in the grocery store or something like that, or, you know, on the airplane, and other people are judging because of this situation when they don't understand what's going on. But that's way beyond that.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I just heard today someone of my acquaintance has a son on the spectrum, and the apartment complex is really getting on them because of the noise complaints that they're getting in the middle of the night, because this child is having some issues in the nighttime and they're facing eviction because a child is on the spectrum, essentially. I mean, that's pretty ridiculous. So that is even an issue.
It's just, I think, a lack of understanding for those around.
It's just a testament that there's still so much work.
But it still seems very discriminatory, because it's like, this is the grounds that you are trying to evict me. Person does have a disability and should be treated with adaptation and stuff like that. The same, she gave another case too about, and this kind of blends in with mental health as well, because people with mental illness are also targeted and there's not a lot of training. And that kind of bleeds into another discussion as well that I won't get into, but because, But this man, he had schizophrenia, and he was wandering around his apartment complex, and one of his neighbors called the cops because he was talking to himself and having seemingly some hallucinations. But he went back inside. The cops busted down his door and tased him in his shower. Apparently, what? He takes a shower to self-soothe when this happens. So he was in his own shower. Cops come in and tase him 20 times, and he dies. because that's what happens when you tase somebody in the shower 20 times. It was just crazy to me, to obvious violations of rights, and all because somebody didn't understand what was happening or what was going on, and then got worse, escalated with the police not knowing what was going on or what signs to look out for. Yeah, we have a lot of work to do. I think a lot of work is being done, obviously, but there's still so much to do. And it's not just individual understanding on that level, like it's systemic as well. There's two different things going on here. It's like individual understanding that kind of spreads outward in your immediate circle. And then there's like systemic problems too. It was really, yeah, really eye-opening, and it's, yeah, still sticking with me.
Yeah, but overall, it was a really great conference. I loved being able to learn and be able to hear from so many people on the spectrum.
And to see so many of them were entrepreneurs, too.
Yeah.
And like putting themselves out there and socializing. And, you know, I bought some bath bombs. His name is Spencer. He makes bath products. And he said, well, people like soap, so why not make soap? I like making soap. And it was great. So yeah, it was really cool. And then just really cool to meet so many interesting people that work so hard and know what they want out of life and are getting it. It doesn't matter that they're on the spectrum. It's still inspirational for me
right?
as well. I mean, it doesn't matter. Like I said, what I learned is something that's applicable to myself and my own personal life.
Right. Just to be able to take life by its reins and just go for it. Understand your own strengths.
Right.
Go with them.
Right. I want to go back.
Yeah. We were very fortunate that it was in Las Vegas.
Yes.
To see where lands. I don't know how that's determined.
Maybe it'll be in Vegas again.
Right. Maybe.
It was in November and it was like 60 degrees. You can't go wrong with that. Come on. What was cool is like worldwide too. So there were people from all over the world coming and talking with us. Yeah. It was awesome.
Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to go check out Patreon. Forget Dis. We really appreciate your support. Any support that we can get allows us to be able to continue to invest the time to be able to help get some more guests on the show and understand more about those with different abilities.
Yes, and we can't wait to talk with more interesting people. We have some really cool interviews lined up, and stay tuned. And don't forget to take the Dis out of disabilities.